you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, Upgrade listeners. This is Alice of the past talking to you in the present about our plans for the future. We're taking a few weeks to upgrade the upgrade. We're retooling some bits, making some things better, some things bigger, some things smaller. While we're hard at work, we thought you'd enjoy this popular episode of The Upgrade from the past. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at lifehacker.com, wherein we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, deputy editor of Lifehacker.
And today we're talking with Samantha Irby, comedian, writer, and the mastermind behind the blog Bitches Gotta Eat. She's the author of the new book of essays, We Are Never Meeting in Real Life, and the old book of essays, Meaty.
And this book is so funny. I can't wait to talk to her.
I am so excited about this. This is a funny book. It made my week.
There's something about a book like this that when somebody is so honest and hilarious at being honest, you feel this kind of deep relief that somebody else is as messed up as you secretly believe that you are.
Right. It's one of those books in which you see yourself on every page and which is described in all the blurbs as like, certain to make you laugh so hard you pee your pants and then make you cry so hard you, I don't know,
pee your pants.
You also pee your pants and then it's just like, whoa, fluids, you know? Everybody who has reviewed the book says that it'll make you laugh, it'll make you cry. Not that many books make me cry. Did this book make you cry?
I got a little teary. There were parts that really, because I think when you're laughing, your guard's down too.
Yeah.
So then suddenly when she kind of hits you, and there's nothing sentimental about her writing at all. So when the sad parts came, they surprised me.
True. Yeah, basically they're autobiographical essays by this writer and blogger, and she is as wise as she is funny and takes us through the experience of being her, I guess.
Yeah. And she's been through some real stuff. But again, like, there's no self-pity or melodrama in anything that she talks about.
She talks about a lot of stuff that we want to get into from a life hacker perspective, like her experience with anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
And strap-ons, certainly.
Important.
We want to get into that. Internet dating. She has a lot of good advice about that. She's just kind of like figured shit out for herself and is completely generous with delivering the truth about the way things are.
Have you ever internet dated?
Yes, I have internet dated. And it
is... as nightmarish?
It is nightmarish, yeah. I would say that it's terrible. I would say it's terrible in the way that anything that gets your hopes up really, really high and then dashes them really, really low is like in the same way, like you apply for a job that you really want and you don't get it. It's sort of like doing that. But like if you go on 3 dates a week, it's like 3 times a week. If those dates aren't successful, like you start emailing somebody and you like think they're awesome and you've got this great repartee on email and you're so excited to get together and you spent all this time getting ready and selecting a place and all this sort of administrative work of getting ready to go on the date. And then you meet the person and 2 minutes in, you're like, this is going nowhere. Or worse, you think like, maybe this is going somewhere. And then it goes nowhere.
Then they disappear.
Yeah. And it's sort of like a little breakup every time that happens. I don't know if things are better with Tinder, you know, where like, there's less expectation. You get your hopes up less high because it's also disposable. You're like, well, we like each other. We'll get together if it doesn't work out. I didn't spend any time like crafting a profile or sending, you know, these beautifully written missives to this person,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
No internet dating for you?
The last time I was dating, there was dial-up.
Okay.
I've been married for a long time. So, yeah, I didn't have to deal with that. Should I not be saying that?
No, you can say that. You can let it out. No, I mean, you're using a very modern form.
I had to live through. That's my dial-up sound.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure people remember it.
You remember that?
Yeah, yeah, I remember that sound.
AOL?
I'm going to say about Samantha Irby that I think that she may be the voice of her generation. Is that fair to say? Do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
I want to crown somebody something.
She definitely deserves that crown.
I feel that, like, you know, her voice is born of the internet, but it certainly is like sophisticated writing that doesn't feel like it's just like a compilation of like somebody's tweeted observations or something. Like, it's really good writing.
It doesn't feel like a collection of blog posts.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's good. I'm psyched to talk to her. We are so happy to have Samantha Irby in the studio with us today. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi.
So good to have you here.
I'm excited to be here.
We are very excited
to have
you.
It's very fancy here. I'm very impressed. Like, I don't feel too Midwest in the Midwest, but when I go anywhere else, I'm like, whoa, look at how sleek everything is.
So let's talk about your book.
Yeah.
Your book is dedicated to Klonopin.
Yes.
Let us all now praise Klonopin.
Yeah. It is amazing. I started having, like, in earnest panic attacks, like, within the last couple of years. And I figured it out because I thought I was having a heart attack because that's what it felt like. I thought I could just, like, ride out the heart attack feeling. I was like, if I just lie down, it'll be okay. But because, like, there's panic, I would lie down and think, I'm going to die. If I close my eyes, they will never open again. So after a couple of emergency room trips where they put the heart monitors on you and, like, make sure you're not having a heart attack, even though they know you're not really, my doctor was like, so let's talk about, like, giving you something for your nerves. And I was like, yeah, let's, because I don't ever want to have that heart attack feeling ever again. So part of the reason to dedicate the book to it is that it helped my life immensely. But also, I didn't want anyone to feel slighted that it wasn't dedicated to them. And so it was just easier to dedicate. Like, I think if I write any more books, they will all be dedicated to inanimate objects because the real human objects in my life will, you know, I already have gotten some, like, oh, I was on the second page of the acknowledgments kind of text. And I'm like, well, you're guaranteeing that you won't be in it at all next time. But Klonopin never talks back, which is why my book's dedicated to it.
You are going
to
get booed by the makers of Ativan, though. They're going to be like, Ativan's
in the book, too.
Ativan's in the book, too, because that's what they give you in the emergency room.
Oh, really? Okay, because does it kick in faster or something?
I think so. They gave it to me in an IV, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I should say this, but, like, I get why people are addicted to, like, heroin and stuff, because those things that knock you out, it's just like a smooth summer breeze, like, wafting over you. And I'm like, I could really get used to this. I could really get used to this, this feeling.
Smooth summer breeze.
I'm going to call my next book Smooth Summer Breeze.
I think we're going to get called by pharmaceutical companies who want to back this episode.
Yeah. They have money. I hope they do. I hope you get paid.
We'll cut you in.
Let's call them or just send them like the rough edit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So
guess what?
So how are you, like, did you have anxiety before the anxiety attack experience? Like, how were you managing it before?
I think ignoring it was a big part of it. I think I can only speak for me, but I feel like this has got to be true for other people. Anxiety and depression to a certain extent, too, depending on who's around you, you can be made to feel like it's indulgent to deal with it and talk about it. It feels like the kind of thing that you should just be able to work out yourself. You know, people are always like, do yoga, take some deep breaths, and then, like, you feel like an asshole because the yoga breathing isn't helping. And so that, and it's an easy thing to think, like, this is just me. It's not clinical. I shouldn't, like, bother the doctor with it. Like, I'm not, it doesn't hurt. It's not sore. It's not broken. It's not bleeding. And so I did a lot of like breathing exercises that didn't work. I tried to meditate, which was a joke because I just was like, what's on TV right now? I really hate to be in a room with a television that is off. So I tried to use like a bunch of apps that didn't help. And then I was like, well, maybe this is really the kind of thing that, like, you know, cutting out gluten and breathing a lot is not going to fix. Mm-hmm. And so then I started talking just to my doctor about it. I was not ready to, like, I don't know that I'm ready to, like, sit in therapy and, like, sort, like, dig up whatever is down there. So I was like, can I talk to you about this and can you help me through this? And she was like, yeah, like, you should have said something months ago. And I was like, well, I was too busy deep breathing and like looking up YouTube videos of how to meditate. Yeah.
And you talked about how you had this feeling growing up that you were, that you suffered from depression even as a little kid. Is that
yeah.
Right?
I mean, my home life wasn't good. And it's also, I come from like, my parents were almost 40 and almost 50 when I was born. Like, my mom was born in 1942 or something, right? And it just wasn't, it wasn't language, like, depression wasn't language that, like, was even used in our house. Like, there was no, like, real feelings talk. There was no, like, checking in. It was just like, and I get it, right? Like, you're a kid. Your life is fine because you're a kid and, like, you don't have bills to pay. Your only job is to go to school. I don't care that you're feeling sad. I don't think it was because they didn't care about me, but it felt like, you know, these are poor people who are struggling. It felt like really indulgent to, you know, have everybody sit around talking about how I didn't feel good, you know. And I definitely came from the kind of people who would be like, you know, you never go outside. Why don't you, like, we bought you a bike. Go ride it, get some fresh air, and you'll feel better. I am a big, like, internalizer of things. Like, if something is wrong, I'm like, it's because I messed it up. Not because things are messed up in general, but it's some, like, failing on my part. And so, you know, growing up hearing, like, you know, it's because you don't go outside. It's because you don't talk to people. Like, you, I don't want to hear about how sad you're feeling or overwhelmed you're feeling. And so then you carry that into adulthood and it's like, it just is a failure on my part. It's because I'm not friendly enough or I don't go to enough places. I'm not trying hard enough. And it takes undoing that kind of thinking is rough, especially if you don't have like someone to guide you, I think. And I think I was starting to like make friends who were openly talking about their struggles with mental illness. It's also really, I've always had jobs. I've always had friends. I've always had like things to do and people who wanted to be around me and like I could get it together to go to parties. And so then it's like, well, nothing is really wrong because I'm not the, you know, the person crying in the corner who can't leave the house for 3 days. Like, I am at work at 7:30 every morning. Does a depressed person do this? Like, does a depressed person still go to work? And so all of those like conflicting things going on made it even more difficult for me to be like, okay, there is a problem and I should probably talk to someone who went to medical school. I should go to therapy, but I'm not there.
Yeah.
Like writing about it is cathartic. It's not curing anything because I'm still the same person who like didn't go to college to learn about how to fix your mind. So I could stand to talk to someone other than like my doctor randomly about how I'm feeling, but it definitely was a big help.
And you have a blog, so you must have heard from readers too who were going through the same.
I wrote a piece that is called Do Black Girls Get to Be Depressed? And it's, I mean, about how a lot of us have the kind, like, you know, like when your mom's like the stereotypical strong black woman who can do anything, it feels like a huge failure to not be that way. Even as a kid, you know, my mom had this terrible childhood and she was very honest about it. You know, she was abandoned and she never had milk, so all of her teeth fell out. I mean, like, really terrible stuff. And here I am with all my teeth complaining about, like, how sad I was. You know, it just was, like, hard to reconcile, like, those two things. So I wrote about it and posted it, and it got reposted a couple places. And so many people emailed me. Shirlane McRae read that and wrote me an open letter.
Shirlane McRae is Bill de Blasio's wife.
Bill de Blasio's wife. Uh-huh. Wrote me an open letter, and their daughter is dealing with depression, and she, like, thanked me for writing about it. And I got so many responses from young Black women who were like, thanks just for saying this. Because, again, it feels like a thing. You can't say you don't want to feel ungrateful to the people who raised you and but didn't talk to you about this side of yourself. I don't know why talking about mental health, like, kind of feels like you might offend someone or hurt their feelings or something, or it's really hard to make yourself vulnerable in that way. But I got a lot of emails and, like, tweets and stuff from women who were happy that I had written about it. And one from a white man who was upset that I didn't talk about white male depression.
Well, to be fair, why didn't you?
I feel like we've covered it a lot from the dawn of man.
We talked about how white men are feeling.
What is, like, the advice that you give to young people who might be going through something similar to what you went through, sort of struggling and not knowing if it's okay to admit to it?
I feel like a lot of people exist sort of in their private space of feeling sad. And that's a horrible place to be. And sometimes it's just enough to pick up the phone. I know nobody talks on the phone, but to pick up the phone and say, hey, one person who I'm sure cares about me and my feelings, can I talk to you about my feelings? It's just good. Maybe they're feeling the same way. Maybe they've found a solution that works for them. Maybe they know a sliding scale therapist where you could go, and maybe they'll call for you, or maybe they'll go with you. But I think it always feels so dismissive when people are like, find a therapist. That's wild. It's not an option for everyone, but sometimes it is. Someone can help you. Someone will help you figure it out. And at least, at the very least, it's good to let people know that, like, you're not a flake. You just didn't make it to dinner because you're depressed and you couldn't do it. I would just say to let people know where you are. And if you can, tell them either what you do or don't want them to do to help you.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So the first essay in your book, you have reprinted in full, I believe, your application for The Bachelorette.
Yeah, I think the questions have changed now, but those were the questions on, like, ABC's website.
What makes that show so compelling?
Well, there definitely was a time in my life that it reaffirmed my dedication to not pursuing romantic relationships at all, because I was like, people are real terrible. And, like, look at this beautiful woman who's like, you bounce a quarter off her ass and, like, She's a successful, you know, they're always like marketing executive, you know, and like she's got this room full of morons tap dancing for her and they're still awful. They're still like not people you would want to eat dinner with, let alone like have sex with or try to marry. So like it was real good. I'm like, I'm not, I love to watch anyone like struggling through a terrible date. So I'm like, well, it's okay that I took down my OkCupid because look, she had like the best producers in the country picking people and this is who they came up with. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'm that one guy who on like last season who kept eating meat all the time.
Chad has taken the term meathead to a whole unparalleled level.
He would take an IV of meat if he could get one.
I don't know if he's here for the free food or if he's here to find love.
When you miss a meal and you look like that, it's detrimental to your progress. At least that's what I've heard from him.
I mean, like there was a nationwide casting call and that's who they picked. And great. I want to watch him. I want to watch him eat meat. I want to watch him drink whey powder or whatever he was doing. Like, I want to watch that. And it like reaffirms like that I'm on the right path. It's like, well, everyone is trash. And like, even this, like this girl who is great has to pick from these dudes. So I started watching it. I think just because I really love to watch dudes like making a fool of themselves. And it was good that like there was a female alternative to the, cause I started watching the original. Was like, has it been like 20 years or almost?
It feels like there was never a time that when there wasn't a Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Even before TV.
Yeah.
It was there.
Yeah. So I started watching in the beginning and I definitely watched Trista and Ryan like the first. They're still married, which is so great. I like
gives hope for everybody.
Have me believing in true love.
You think they're just like, we're hanging on no matter what. Like, they hate each other, but they're just like.
Yeah. And then like I have a group of friends who like watches. And so I don't ever want to be out of the loop. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, I'm committed. I'll watch. And so I just kept watching. It's so entertaining. It also, I mean, like I'm 37 now and like as I've gotten older it's just like, oh man, these poor youths, if this is how they have to get together, like I just sort of watch it and like chuckle in my senior citizen pants pulled up to my nipples. I'm like, oh, these poor kids. Like now I just think it's kind of funny, except with the new woman, Rachel.
Rachel Lindsay will be the next Bachelorette, and she'll be the show's first Black lead ever. The 31-year-old attorney from Dallas has been a fan favorite all throughout Nick Viles' season.
My Blackness, this is what watching TV is like for Black people. When it's our show, it's fine. When it's all us, it's fine. Queen Sugar, amazing. I know Ava and Oprah are going to take care of us. It's fine. When they put us on some white shit, I watch with interest, but I'm also like poised to, with my finger on the Al Sharpton button for when one of these dudes like says something about chicken or whatever. You know it's coming. You know somebody's going to plan a fried chicken date and then we all got to storm ABC or whatever. So like it's very stressful for me, Black woman, I sit like so nervous waiting for whatever thing they're going to do to her. I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be something I know I'm going to
poke
my own eyes
coming
out.
From the white producers. Is that
a combination of them or the men,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So I don't know if you have watched this season. I won't go too far into it. I don't want to spoil anything for people. But there is a guy.
Bachelorette fans.
There's a guy who, like, you know, they show the name and then underneath the name they show, like, what they do for a living. And so under his name it says Waboom. And, like, that's his, like, catchphrase. and he screams Waboom a lot. So on the first episode, when people are showing up in like shark suits and with marching bands, you're like, all right, she's going to weed all this riffraff out. We can all get a laugh. And then next week we'll get serious with like the guys who like actually own the suits that they brought, right? So this dude, like, he screams Waboom so loud. Like, he screams it so loud that, like, in one instance, he fell off the chair he was sitting in. And I'm like, you know, you got to get this dude off my TV, right? I'm like, she's a lawyer. She's, like, perfect and beautiful. I'm like, this is not. So they have the ceremony. If you guys haven't watched the first episode, I'm sorry, but keep up. This isn't, like, Game of Thrones or whatever. So I'm going to ruin this for you. But at the end, the rose ceremony, she keeps that guy. And I was like, she is not interested in him. Like, this has to be producers telling her to keep him.
He's good TV.
Her a $500 bill.
Like, yeah. Just
keep, I've seen Unreal. I know how it goes.
So then I'm like, I mean, part of me is like a dumb romantic. I'm like, I do like kind of to see people like happy and in love. But then I'm like, she can't be into this dude. And it's like so clear that they're going to keep him around for a while to like be the guy who pisses off the other guys. So it's making me a little sad because I don't want Rachel to waste her time. But I mean, I won't stop watching, but I do have like the 9 and the 1 already dialed when I watch it. And I'm going to be like, police. Waboom just screamed in the honeymoon suite or a fantasy suite. Send me an ambulance so I can go to ABC and register my offense.
So you're married now.
Yeah.
So you're done with all of this. No. But you, in the book, you touch on the ridiculosity and frustration of trying to find a date.
Oh, yeah.
Online. And one of the things you say is that a friend told you that you were too funny or too clever in your profile.
Yeah. So I think I still like have it. It's not active, but I think it's there in case my wife ever cuts up. I still have an OkCupid profile. And so I had my friend Jill was like a dater with intention, right? She decided that it was time to get married and whatever. She went on eHarmony because she said that was the serious one because you pay.
And you're Christian.
And I don't even think she was, but like she wanted a dude who would be on eHarmony, like trying to get
serious.
Christian women, I guess. So like a serious, like marrying type of person. And so she was like, so she met a guy and they were getting married and she's like, let me look at your dating profile. And I was like, oh yeah, girl, here you go. It's so funny. And my screen name was Fart Throb. And she looked at me, you know, like I had just like taken a bite out of a baby, right? She was like, this is not, who are you expecting to meet? And I was like,
someone
funny. Because listen, if my dating name is like goes to school 23, you know what I mean? Or like listens to NPR with a smiley face, they're going to meet me. Like this is like, if you're going to meet someone, if you're just like messing around or like have fun, okay, I could be like, loves the library and, you know, listens to cello concertos. But then, like, if somebody's going to meet me, it's like all my pictures were like the fattest, whaliest pictures I could take. One of them, I was like bending over a cake. And I'm like, because like, I don't want you to roll up into the bar and be like, now my best pictures are like this 3/4 of my face with my chins in shadow, right? So like, but if I post, that's fine for Instagram, but if I post that, then like with someone who I might actually like want to build at 6 months with, and like,
don't get carried away.
Girl, I mean, I'm hopeful. Yeah. I believe in love.
That's sweet.
So I'm like, if I really want to meet somebody, I got to be like me. And so Fart Throb is hilarious. And if you want to, if you would want to be with me, you would think that was funny. And if it made you want to throw up, then you know we're not going to work.
I mean, I think there's something, this is hilarious, obviously, but there's something really valuable here because we hear a lot from, you know, life hacker readers, and we've written a lot, talked a lot about internet dating. And as you say in your book, that there is this big emphasis on showing yourself as you actually are, especially in pictures. And if you show up and you're bigger than you are in your photos, like you have committed a crime against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're saying like, yeah, like show exactly who you are, show exactly what you look like, certainly, and like be yourself in your profile.
Yeah.
And your friend was saying like, no.
Yeah.
And like, I'm wondering that if like the system is broken in some way, like I'm not saying because you didn't find your true love on OkCupid, so obviously it doesn't work. But do you know what I mean? Like, with all the emphasis and you're saying like, I felt perfectly comfortable being myself. And I'm sure that there are people out there who are like, well, if I'm myself, you know, I'll never meet anybody. Like, I wonder like what the happy medium is there. And also if like all of this is like old people talking about internet dating because everybody's on
the kids
Tinder.
Are like, shut up, grandma.
They're like, swipe.
We don't even meet people. We have these like oxygen bars we go to. You don't even know about. They're underground. But for those of us our age, I feel like, so my whole thing was like, I am not a real like, take me as I am kind of person. Like, if you don't like me, it's all good. But what I am is kind of a lazy person. And I tried to do the thing where you pretend to be into something you're not. And it's not only is it exhausting, but it often, the longer you spend with a person, the more, like, if you pretend you don't watch TV, right, there's going to be a weekend, like, you go away for your first weekend with a person, and you're dying to watch a television, and then, you know, they go for a run, and you turn it on, and they come back and catch you, and they're like, I thought you only listened to, you know, to talk radio, and like, I thought you were really interested in politics, you know, and you're like burning the newspaper for kindling. It's like, how long can you keep that going? Like, there's only so long you can like pretend you eat a lot of like salad or whatever when you just eat cheeseburgers all the time. And I feel like your person is not gonna want you to lie. They're not gonna. Also, like, this idea that, like, you have to hold it together until some amount of time when it's okay to just let it all hang out. Why not just let it all hang out from the beginning? And I'm not against, like, wanting to make changes and, like, be better. But I feel like doing that and trying to meet a new person is real hard. Like, you could reinvent yourself as a person who doesn't watch TV, but don't date at the same time because you're going to get caught. They're going to catch you watching The Bachelorette, and then you're going to have to admit that you're a trash can. And then, you know, they'll feel like you lied. It's going to be real dramatic. And it's easier to just say, I eat food out of the garbage and watch reality television.
And don't you want to be with somebody who also eats food out of the garbage and
or
puts the good food in the garbage?
So you can, you know. I mean, so my wife is like a chia seed, bee pollen, maca powder kind of lady. She does not get invested in television shows. And I do, I like characters on TV are like my family, right? I'm like, don't Fargo is on. Don't talk to me. So like, I know you're on fire. Get out of the room till 10:02. There are people who are different than you who will, I mean, nobody wants to date their clone. No, there's probably some narcissists who want to date their clone, but I think she appreciates all of our differences. And the more different you are, the easier it is. This is my new theory. I'm not smart enough to like do sociology, but the more different you are, the easier it is because you're not going to fight over stuff. Mm. Like, I walk around sometimes, I should not admit this. I walk around sometimes with like the remote controls in my bag because I don't want her to like mess up my recordings. And it doesn't, because she doesn't care as much.
Life hack, take the remote with yeah. you so your partner can't yeah. fuck up the DVR.
Yeah.
I have not heard that. That is good.
But it does. If she comes downstairs and the remote's not there, she doesn't like get upset about it. She just goes and like gardens or whatever other healthy projects she does. But like, because I am never gonna race her downstairs to get the newspaper on a Sunday morning because I don't care about news. So she can do that. I have my things. I'm never gonna mess up the unflavored, unsweetened yogurt. Like, she's never gonna come home and find that I've scraped the thing clean, right? So like, it's perfect. We always like focus on the looks, you know, like I have to find someone who looks like this, whatever. And my thing is I need to find someone who doesn't care about TV, who's always going to let me pick the music in the car. Like, you know, I'm like, what do you want to listen to on this road trip? And she's like, whatever you want to listen to. And I'm like, man, what a dream. Right?
I think what you're describing is like that each of you are a certain way and you're not sort of like doctrinal or dogmatic about being that particular way.
Right.
So you don't insist that everybody else kind of live the way that you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, no. I think we have – so she has kids. She's got to spend a lot of time like making sure they don't figure out the iPad password. So I get to kind of like do my writer thing, my making fun of her for money thing. And then she's like got her stuff over here. She's like trying to figure out which laundry detergent has the least climate impact or whatever. I mean, whatever she is doing. And then, but like we have the, like we like each other and we have the bond that keeps us together, but we don't have to, you know, we don't even read the same types of books. It's really, like, she comes home with these thick, you know, dictionary books from the library, and I'm like, what
is... Dictionary books. I mean,
right?
The La Ruth.
They're just words in order,
That's what they
order.
Look like when I try to read them. I'm like, I have to have a thing to follow, a life to follow along with my finger, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't, you know, she's got, like, a bunch of fancy Ivy League degrees and stuff, and I only went to high school. I actively try not to learn new things, so... It works.
It sounds magical.
Yeah. This emphasis that like everyone in your life has to care about what you care about is so bananas to me.
Yeah.
I want all my little stuff gathered with me. I want to carry it with the remotes in my bag. And then you have your life. And then at the end of the day, we'll convene at the dinner table and then you go do your thing and I'll go do my thing again. It works.
Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir lived next door to each other for 50 years.
That is the dream of my life.
Yeah.
Oh, that would
like
be...
Lucy and Ethel.
Yes. I keep saying, like, so I moved from Chicago to Kalamazoo where she lives. And I keep saying that I want to get an apartment, like, just 5 minutes away. You know, so that like, because we don't ever fight, like, because what's to fight about? But the things that irritate, I mean, I can't care. The things that irritate me, though, are so small and could be solved, like, by us not living in the same place. Like, I am a leisurely diner. Like, if you're done eating and you want to get up from the table, but like leave your bowl in case you want those last two spoonfuls, that's fine by me. But she's a like, you know, is this glass done?
Yeah.
Are you done?
Right.
You gonna drink these two sips? Should I refill it? And I'm like, man, if I was in my apartment, I just have this glass sitting here for 3 days and it wouldn't matter. I don't need, she's like taking it out of my hand. So I'm working on
these are
that.
The things that people fight about, though.
Yes.
Like, we laugh about them like these are minor things, but these are actually like the what turn into the very big sort of
the stubble in the sink,
yep.
the like video game controller cords on the floor. It's, I feel like those are the little things that add up to I've been with you for 10 years. Get away.
Right. I can't see another dirty glass on the table.
Yeah.
I feel like if shoes didn't exist, I would have 30% fewer fights with my husband. Like just shoes. They're everywhere. You take them off and you put them down and they're in someone's way and
that's
someone's mad about shoes.
My shoes are all over the place. And like often it's because she will come along and move my shoes. And then I'm like going nuts. So I go get some different shoes that I know where they are. And then I take those off and leave them. And, you know, after a couple of days, it's like, your shoes are all over the place. And I'm like, well, if you'd have just left them in the one place that I left them. But you can't live like that with another person.
Mm-hmm.
In my apartment, in my fantasy marriage apartment, it would just be shoes. I would like walk to one pair of shoes, step out of them and put the new shoes on and walk to another pair of shoes. It would just be like a puzzle as I make my way to the bathroom.
Heaven.
Make my way to the bathroom.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So your new wife has children.
Yeah.
What's it like to be a parent when you didn't think you'd ever be one?
It's a ride. First of all, I tell the kids all the time, I'm like, I'm not your parent. Like, parents decide, like, when you get vaccinated and, like, how much cheese you can eat or whatever.
Those are the two decisions for
parents.
Yes,
that's it. And since I don't get to make those, I'm like, I'm not your stepmom.
How old are they?
They are 9 and 11. Oh, man. They're a lot of fun. I am too immature in some ways to like feel like I am a good influence on them. For instance, this is a thing that I do that's like probably real terrible, but it's so good. So they fight a lot. There's a boy who's older and the girl's younger. So these kids are always in each other's shit. They're always, the one can't be playing the piano without the other one like coming and making up mean words like to an imaginary song while it happens. You know what I mean? They're all, when one is over here and the other one is over there, it's like they sense that like, you know, I could go fuck with her and then they just go do it. So if I were a mature person, I would be like, children, you guys are siblings and you gotta like love each other and take care of each other. But like a couple weeks ago, I was in the bedroom and I could hear them fighting through the vent. And I was like, guys, get in here. Now, I don't discipline them or reprimand them. I just am like a captive audience. So I'm like, guys, get in here. And I think they thought they were going to get in trouble. Like all of a sudden I was going to turn over a new mom leaf. So they come in the room and they're like looking kind of sheepish. They're like, yeah. And I pull out my phone. I start recording them. And I was like, now start that fight over again where I can see it and like record it. And so the girl was like telling the boy he smelled like diarrhea on a megaphone and they were like marching around the room doing that. And then Kirsten comes upstairs and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, shh, I'm recording this fight. And so it's weird because I'm obsessed with their like sibling relationship because I didn't have that. And if my sisters had been my age, I feel like we would have murdered each other because I have no patience. The stuff they do to each other, I'm like, I'll be sitting at the table, like listening to them yelling at each other and just be like, if she said that to me, and I was a kid, I'd throw this chili in her face. You know, like I am like obsessed with how they relate to each other. They think that I'm very cool because I have books that they aren't allowed to read. Like they know that they're not allowed to read my books. I'm also like, I like all the stuff that kids are really into and their moms usually say no, right? So I play my music real loud. The first time I came, like, pulling up to the house with, like, you know, some Ice Cube bumping, and the girl was on, we have a tree swing, like, this is the kind of quaint life we're living, and, like, I pull up, and, like, all the neighbor kids are looking terrified, and, like, the girl child is like, this is amazing, I can't believe this is my mom's wife playing her music so loud. Like, I have tattoos, and, like, I curse, and I watch a lot of TV, and they're, like, obsessed with TV because they have, like, screen limits and stuff. And so it's been very easy for me because they never are, like, trying to challenge me because I don't boss them around. So every day is, like, a party. They discover that I have a secret snack cabinet and, like, that doesn't have, like, bee pollen in it or, like, wheatgrass. I don't even know what this bitch eats, but I'm always – ever her bowl – always, our, like, breakfast bowl always looks like forest. It just is, like, green shit in a puddle of brown shit. Ugh. Ugh. And she poops a lot because of it, guys. I mean, I guess that's the key to health. Anyway, the kids are, like, the first thing I ever cooked for them, I was, like, looking up recipes for kids. I made a cheeseburger macaroni pie. And they don't eat like that. They eat like, you know, steamed whitefish with like a little lemon and broccoli rabe or whatever. You know, like all those vegetables that like, you're like, who buys those? Who's buying kohlrabi? This bitch is buying kohlrabi. Like every time I pull up in the produce drawer, I'm like, what is this? So I made this like cheeseburger macaroni thing and they looked at like their eyes were like shining. They were like, who are you? What magical, this food has salt on it. I can't believe it. So it's been really easy when people are like walking around treating you like a rock star all the time. Their friends love me. I can't tell all these little blonde children of the corn apart. I can't tell them. I don't know who's in our house. There's always some fucking kids in our house. And I'm like, who is this? And the kids are like, Sam, hey, Sam, do you want to hear about what I did in fourth grade? And I'm like, no, I don't give a fuck about what you did in fourth grade, but do you want to watch this R-rated movie with me? And the kids are like, yay, we love Sam. She ordered a pizza, you know? So right now, because, you know, it's only been a year, they still love me. They think I'm great. So for now, like, it's real cool. Eventually, they'll be teenagers and they'll think that, you know, I'm lame or, you know, unfunny. I don't know what lessons they are learning from me. I do think sometimes, like, what impact am I really having on these dudes by teaching them to, like, love TV and fight on command?
It sounds like you're balancing out their mom a little bit.
Yes.
Balance, you know, is important.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're going to go to college and just, you know, just have cheeseburger pie every single night.
Yes. Although, yeah.
I think well with that. I think that's actually okay.
Yeah. Perfect.
I kind of want that right now.
Let's talk about sex. You have a whole essay in your book about your first time having lesbian sex.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret?
For me, I realized that I'm only good with, like, my mouth and my hands because I tried.
Right.
I thought we had to be, like, to be official that I had to, like, master the strap on, and I did not. It was like so awkward. I'm not real coordinated. Like, I'm definitely not smooth or coordinated. And so, like, it was real awkward. And I couldn't figure out, like, because of the way, I don't know how deep we want to get into this, pun intended, but I couldn't figure out how to make, like, how to get the harness in a comfortable enough place that, like, I could move my hips and, like, with any sort of, like, regular back and forth motion. It kept, like, and I was, like, there's, like, straps and pulleys. And I'm, like, you know, trussed up, like, with this, like, sort of silicone dick bouncing around. And I could not get it right. So then I just invested in a bunch of like really fancy like vibrators and stuff. And those I'm good at. My hand-eye coordination is much better than my like, you know, disembodied penis. Eye coordination.
We're going to have a story on Lifehacker soon about how to use the disembodied penis.
Whoa!
So, yeah, so stay tuned. It's coming. Sex writer is on it. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I think it is a stamina thing, though, too. Like, it's
Just
like,
and I have none. I was like, I read a thing about, like, what to do, and it was like, you definitely need to, like, work out to be good at it. And I was can I just lay on my back and you climb aboard?
Yeah.
That's eventually where we ended up, but it was
I feel like
not
there are men
good.
Who are thinking like, now you know how much hard work it is. It's like, no, you're driven by the pleasure that you're feeling through your penis, it's easy to have stamina.
Too, is like, I didn't feel anything on my end. So they're like the motivation to continue, like I'm generous, but not like that. I was like, bitch, my back hurts. Get up. So we attempted that twice maybe. And then I was like, no, we figured out the other ways. Let's just do the other ways. And she was okay. She was okay with that. I process things like with humor always. And she's a feelings person. And so I was laughing and she was not. And that was a weird moment for us. I was like, well, this has stopped being intimate for me because it's hilarious. And she was like, well, it hasn't stopped being intimate for me. And I was like, girl, get out of here so I can get this thing off. It was like, climb off. Also, like the silicone started to smell weird. Like, you, ew. Yeah. It was no good.
Yeah, not for you.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So the secret is, like, don't feel pressured to do everything.
Well, I think that's good advice for everybody, too. And it's good advice for men, you know, and women who feel like there has to be a phallus in order for sex to be good or for sex to happen.
I just wanted to, like, prove to the no people who were in the room that I was really committed to, like, you know, I wasn't, like, play acting, that I wasn't just like waiting for a dude to come along. I'm like, no, I'm committed to this. We're going to have, bring a bag full of jump ropes and plastic dicks to bed with us just so I can prove that we're really into it. And like that bag of jump ropes has been hanging in the closet for 2 years.
The bag
years.
Of jump ropes is the harness.
Yes. Yeah, oh, sorry. Yes. It looks like a bunch of tangled electrical cords. I mean, by the time you get it all unfurled, I was like, this is more work than I ever want to do in general, let alone to like have sex that's not even going to feel good to me to like later, like after I do all this work when I just am going to want to go to bed. So we don't use it anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you need a harness, call me. I'll send it to you.
Right. It was very expensive. At lifehacker.com.
I got the best kind, you guys. So if you want it, I'll send it to you. That's probably just a disgusting thing to offer people. It's been strapped around my butt, like on my haunches. You don't
if you don't
it.
Care about that, then
I'm not washing it.
Twice used.
Gently used.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's ask a few quick questions, if you don't mind.
I'll be quick.
I mean quick as in like rapid fire.
Okay.
Because I just want to know your answers.
Okay.
And you don't actually have to answer rapidly.
Okay.
But I feel like we have so many things and I just like
we
I
do
can
have
imagine
so many
like they're inspired by the book. So what's the best cocktail?
I'm really into lately like hand shaken pina coladas. Like not the blended, like, you know, cheesy kind, like the Coco Lopez with the rum over ice.
Wait,
that's what I'm into.
Why aren't you putting it in the blender?
I'm not sure. I had it at Chicago. Now has a couple of like tiki kind of inspired places. And I had one at this place and it was like just in a tall, skinny glass, not blended. And it was the most delicious thing I had ever had. So that's my new, my move this summer. Perfect. Is the unblended piña colada.
Wow, that sounds great. Delicious. So what do you do better than anyone else?
Charm middle-aged women. I'm very good. Not y'all. I went, I probably shouldn't even say middle-aged women, but I went to a book party last night. Cause it's BEA, so there's all these book people in town. And like, boy, give me a 60-year-old woman. 2 minutes, I will like, I mean, if it was a sex thing, I would have her pants off. But 2 minutes, like, she's in love with me.
What's your secret?
Compliments. And that sounds like so cliche, but you can't give them, you can't be like, you have to like do it with a little sex appeal. So I'm always like, hey, Judy, girl, those high-waisted chinos look amazing. And then Judy's like, here's a key to my Buick. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's great. I'm very good at that.
Nice. What is the number one rule of casual sex?
Don't expect much.
Good. Okay. What's better, being outside or being inside?
Inside.
How come?
Inside. It's temperature controlled most of the time. No bugs. No humans unless you open the door and let, like, no humans that you wouldn't want to talk to unless you open the door and let them in. Inside. Mm. No flies on your food. Mm-hmm. No sun cancering your face. Inside.
So what is the best exercise you can do?
We were in a car accident and I hurt my back. And so I've been doing these like seated exercise with resistance bands and it works. Like it feels real good and it feels like it's doing something. So resistance sitting exercise. I mean, it's, you can watch TV or like, I mean, you could eat while you do it. You probably shouldn't, but you could. Mm-hmm. It's real great.
So exercise you can do while eating.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. People are going to be like, that's the fattest answer I've ever heard. But what can I say? No,
this is an interview with you. we don't care what people think. All right. There are three pieces of advice that you give early on in the book that I was wondering if you could comment on.
Yeah.
Wear clothing that actually fucking fits.
Yeah.
What's the advantage of that?
So when I say clothing that fits, that's not a knock against like people who like tight clothing. I mean, and this is the thing that sort of takes, that took a while for me. I'm only going to speak for me. That took a while for me. Like, I was always, and I still sometimes, depending on the style, like wearing the wrong bra. That's like a, that's a thing for me. Like,
you enjoy
tights,
it?
No, well, I don't enjoy it. I just didn't understand how like trying to pick it myself without letting the lady measure me was like messing up my shoulders and making me look funny. So when I say wear clothes that fit, I mean, if you need a hemmed a specific way pants, or like you have a waist that really comes in but your butt's big and like you need somebody to fix the waist, or you need someone to measure your bra, to like do that so that your body, I am all about like being comfortable when you're moving around in the world. So if you want to wear super tight, whatever, like I don't care about any of that. But I mean, like, if you need a foundation piece that actually like makes you, like, I got measured for a bra and like the woman was like, yeah, you are wearing, like, the band size was too small and the cup size was too big, and she gave me the right bra and like I, it like changed, it changed.
This is many
life.
Women's story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Usually it's that the band is too big and the cups are too small.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I feel like anything that helps you feel better in your clothes.
What about buy drugs from reputable dealers only?
Yeah. So once when I was very young, so 2 weeks ago, no, this is like when I was in my early 20s, I got weed from this dude and it was laced with crack. Fuck, man. Like, that was like so, it was so scary. And I was like, something is wrong.
You wished you had known your ambulance driver then.
Yeah, I'm like, something is wrong. I just wrote it out, though, and like called him and was like, what's up? And he's like, I gave you the wrong thing. So do whatever drugs you want, but like know the guy. Especially like people are like real into pills now. And I get it, you know. I want to feel sleepy all the time. Like, I get it. But like, just make sure like that the guy is, you know, like all your pills have a little like thing engraved into it. Yeah. Just like look that up so you know what you're getting. I'm not encouraging pill popping, but I get it. Just like look, or even if like your homegirl is like, here's a Klonopin, just like look up the collection, make sure she's not giving you one of her other pills. You know,
birth control.
Yeah. If she can get it.
Right. Pressure.
Exactly.
If she has any to spare.
Right.
God.
And perhaps the one that you seem most adamant about, do not walk away from an overdrawn checking account. Why not?
Let me tell you guys, checks systems is nothing to fuck with. That's the organization, I assume it's a big, it's a building probably here, full of faceless drones who will remind you that you ruined your life for 7 years. So I overdrew on, I didn't even realize it, right? Because I was getting my direct deposit sent to a new bank and I'd like immediately just forgot about, it's like a boyfriend, I forgot about my old one. And it, like there was a fee or something that went overdrafted and I had moved. This was before like your bank texted you every 10 minutes to let you know that like 5 cents was taken out. And I never forward my mail. I'm like, new apartment, new life. So like I didn't know. So I eventually was like, I'm going to get like an account. So I walk into Chase Bank like a real asshole with a paycheck and I'm like, so I need to get an account. And they looked me up and they're like, we can't give you a checking account. And she was like, there's a mark on your history. And I'm like, it was like an old phone bill. Like, what is it? And then she was like, you are entered in the checks systems for having like messed up this bank account. And like, we can't help you. And I was like, that old account is going to haunt me forever. So then I spent like 7 years putting, you know, paying for my everything in cash and like hiding my money under a mattress. And then like once that passed, I now have a Chase Bank account. This episode has been brought to you by Chase Bank. I have a bank account, but I really had to wait, like a person who had declared bankruptcy or something, I had to wait for that to get off my record. And it was a thing. And by that point, I couldn't undo it. So much time had passed. So like, leave a dollar in there, or at least if you are like me and walk away from your responsibilities rather than deal with them.
And now it's time for the upgrade of the week. Each week, as you know, we talk about that one tiny thing we've done that has made a big difference in our lives. Alyssa, how did you upgrade your life this week?
I have a retro upgrade this week. I have been using Clearasil. I know, crazy. It's not Oxy-10. I'm not going that far back. But I don't know if you've noticed. I mean, I know you've noticed that I have this ridiculous pimple on my face. Anybody? You
no.
can see it from over there?
Not visible.
That's because the microphone's hiding it.
Okay, good. So I'm just going to hold this here all the time. Anyway, I have acne. I'm you know, I'm sure that it's probably hormonal, and people say that about acne, like that's supposed to make it okay. Like, mm-hmm. oh, it's hormonal. Is it around your mouth? Well, then it's hormonal. It's still acne. It's like the, with, giant cockroaches. You're like, oh my God, there was this giant cockroach the size of my hand. And people are like, oh, that's a water bug. You're like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's still a giant bug. It's not okay just because we know something about it. So I have a giant, possibly hormonal zit, and I have been putting all types of different ointments on it, like grown-up ointments, like vitamin A and retin-A solutions and retinoids and things to try to make it go away. But the only thing that has actually made it start going away is Clearasil, and they still make it. And you can buy it at your local drugstore, and I highly recommend it.
You know what? I used Clearasil when I was pregnant, and I asked my OBGYN if I could – like, I was like, I don't know. Is it on the list of things you're not supposed to take? And she laughed at me. She was like, that's for teenagers. I'm like, okay, but I have the skin of a teenager, clearly,
I'm just right now. Really upset that no developments in zit care have come along that are better than Clearasil.
Benzoyl peroxide works.
Yeah, it works. I'm here to say it works. I mean, it's not working fast enough, and I'm sure there's like a prescription antibiotic that would like wipe it all out and give me an alabaster brow, but that's
But do we
not
need
happening.
More antibiotics in our lives too, you know?
Okay, that's you for
know?
Another episode.
Right?
Yeah, okay. Okay.
So, Sam, what's your upgrade of the week?
I have been drinking water this week, which I am not a good hydrator. Everyone says that you need to drink water. I know that I don't drink enough, but since I have been in New York this week and like everyone here is like glamorous and looks hydrated, I mean, kind of, I was like, you know what I should do is drink water. I have seen none of the benefits that people are always talking about. It's only been a week. So maybe.
How much are you drinking? I see you've made quite a bit of progress on your glass over there.
I mean, I, you know what? I went and bought like those big, the tall smart waters that make like that Jennifer Aniston drinks. And I have yet to wake up looking like Jennifer Aniston, but my pee is not brown. So I guess it's working. And
that is the first sign that it's working.
Yeah. I've been drinking water and like $15 juices, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, you gotta
I come
do that.
To New York to do, like, the New York-iest things, yeah. Which is to get, like, overpriced juice. So between those things, my skin is looking exactly as disgusting as it always does. And
no, true.
I feel like I'm retaining all this water, but I'm drinking water. I'm caring about my health this week by drinking water.
Nice. It's called the New York diet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just drinking water at all is very New York.
Just water.
Yeah. And Alice, what about you? What's your upgrade of the week?
Well, I have been getting up even earlier than normal. I know. I get up pretty early to write every morning. Oh. So I, you know, before there was life before this place. Before Life Hacker,
all right.
Where I was, okay,
let's not make it depressing.
I'm just saying. Where I was a writer, I was a full-time writer, but, and, you know, I'm perfectly happy to not be that, but I have been missing doing my own writing, so I've been getting up early. And most of the time, what I actually do is just stare into space and think about how I have nothing to say and no good words left. But just doing that, just kind of having that time has been, like, really, like, my mood has improved so much just to like have that
right get up early and take the time
even if it's 15 minutes like just having that time to like do my own thing and also to like not just be up and running with work the minute I wake up because that's kind of what I have been doing just to like remember that I'm a human being and you know like have a life has been yeah it's been really nice.
Thank you so much for being here, Sam.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so fun.
And that's our show. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at Melissa Kirsch. Alice is at Ben Slippy. Samantha Irby is at Word Science, but the real magic is at bitchesgottaeat.blogspot.com. And of course, you can find Lifehacker at Lifehacker. The Upgrade is produced by Levi Sharp. Our executive director of audio is Mandana Mofidi. Brad Fisher mixed the episode.
Want to contact us? Suggest a topic for future episodes of The Upgrade? Email us at upgrade@lifehacker.com. You're also welcome to go old school and leave us a voice message at 347-687-8109 which we love, but really the best way to reach us is email. You can always find us on Panoply, NPR One, and wherever else you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to follow Lifehacker on Facebook at whereelsefacebook.com/lifehacker. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade, where we welcome your comments and suggestions and life hacks and mash notes in the comments at lifehacker.com/the show.